The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to invite you to this program. We have a lot to share today. I'm not going to have a guest because I have so much information, so much relevant information on health and healing, protecting you against DNA damage from CAT scans and x-rays, giving you the latest on fish oil, and how a simple nutrient that is present at birth, colostrum, can do an enormous amount of good for your immune system. Also, to talk about upcoming guests, here's what you can expect starting later today at the 3 o'clock show. We'll be talking with Professor Robert Jensen, and we're going to talk about the times we live in and how we're coping with the great amount of uncertainty and confusion due to fears of further economic collapse and job insecurity and drastic climate change conditions and the onslaught of toxins on human health. And a nation that's intent on perpetual war, at least those leading it, and how this all ends up impacting upon us. That'll be a very interesting topic, and that's 3 o'clock today. Tomorrow, since George Bush, and now with Obama's Arne Duncan to head up America's education policy, there has been an aggressive assault on the minds of children from kindergarten through grade 12. This has included compulsory education, standardized testing, the corporatization of teaching, the schools turning into many prisons for the purpose of churning out dweebs and serfs who will serve a rapidly growing corporate agenda that is governing much of the nation's political and social events. So we're going to explore tomorrow the origins of this movement and where it's going to lead the younger people and the future generations. And that will be John Taylor Gatto. And he was named New York State's Teacher of the Year 3 times. Then on tomorrow, we're also going to have at 3 o'clock, Jeremy Scahill, investigative reporter, fellow at the Nation Institute. Where should we draw the line between our federal defense, our armed forces and intelligence agencies, and then the private military-industrial contractors, mercenary private spy operations that are being astronomically funded by you and I? Do we need all this? Will it make us safer? We're going to talk about that. Then the next day, during the past couple of months, we've witnessed the large corporations promoting genetically modified foods such as Monsanto, DuPont, BASF, among others, making substantial headway with our federal oversight agencies to increase their portfolios, beets, alfalfa. By the way, the newest thing is genetically modified salmon, and it won't be labeled. You won't know that it's genetically modified. Are you going to be eating a frankenfish? My suggestion, go vegan. Don't eat it at all. They've already been genetically engineering soybeans. Now they got the eucalyptus tree, among others. This raises the question about the White House and its true commitment to human health and sustainable agriculture. Don't be misled by that little itty-bitsy, teeny-weeny White House organic garden. That means nothing. We'll have Jeffrey Smith on, one of the world's foremost experts on the health and environmental risk of genetically modified organisms, and that is tomorrow. Then, during the coming 2.5 years, we are certainly going to witness growing anxiety over the 2012 hypothesis. I can't tell you how many people have said, what about 2012? And I say, take a real scholarly course in history and you'll see that none of that is true. But I want to bring someone else in to deal with the paranoiasis of solitary individuals who think that, well, there's going to be some catastrophe in 2012. Lawrence Joseph will be talking about this and all the other apocalyptic prophecies coming. And then conversations with remarkable minds. This woman is at the heart of my film, Death by Medicine, which I've just been upstairs. I'm broadcasting live from our studio in New York. You can watch this program by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNall.com. And at the core of this film is this woman in her last interview before she retired and left the United States for Greece. Her name is Elizabeth Satouris. She's an evolutionary biologist, a futurist, professor specializing in design of living systems. She was at MIT, University of Massachusetts, and she's going to talk with us from Europe about reasons why we have been separating ourselves from nature and how to resolve this biopolarity to make our future better. So that gives you an idea of some of the guests coming up the remainder of just this week, individuals who have a lot to share. I'll be giving you our numbers and going to our call lines in just a few moments. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. And keep in mind, I scan the world literature, the scientific literature, the peer-reviewed literature, early every morning to try to find new things you're not going to find in your local newspaper here from one of the local pundits on television. Fish oil. The newest study is published in Cancer Epidemiology and Biomarkers and Prevention, which is the journal of the American Association for Cancer Research, shows postmenopausal women who take fish oil for at least 10 years are far less likely by 32% to develop breast cancer. Now, when you realize that breast cancer is a major killer of aging women in the United States, postmenopausal women, for them to be able to take 1,000 milligrams, 1,500 milligrams of the fish oil each day, saving their lives, this is very important and very positive. Anywhere between 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams a day. They studied 35,000 postmenopausal women on this, age 50 to 76, who did not have a history of breast cancer, and then they followed them, and they saw those that did not get the breast cancer, and those that did. Those that took the highest amount of fish oil were least likely to develop breast cancer. Now, in addition to this, there are other supplements that we now know can reduce your risk of breast cancer. And that would, and also to help you with menopause, black cohosh, dong quai, St. John's wort, all reduce the risk of menopausal symptoms. And then there was a study done at Harvard University. It was a randomized study on vitamin D, and it also shows that vitamin D would lower the risk of cancer and stroke and heart disease. Two things you can do that are very easy. Take 1,000 to 2,000 units of vitamin D, and take 1,000 to 1,500 units of fish oil and help with your life. When you are born and your mother breastfeeds you, the very first liquid you're getting is colostrum. When a calf is born, the very first substance is colostrum. Colostrum is what your body makes when you're delivering a child to super potentize the immune system, to get it started. There's new research on this, and it's very good research. This was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Here's what it says. Supplements of colostrum from cows may counter the drop in immune function following exercise. 4 weeks of supplementation with colostrum reversed the decreases in the function of immune cells that accompanied intense exercise. Quote, the main findings of the present study are that 4 weeks of colostrum, it improved the speed of recovery of neutrophil function after exercise-induced immunodepression and reduced exercise-induced alterations in salivary lysine concentrations. What that means in lay language is that every time you do an intense exercise, your body's immune system goes down. Now, there are things you can do to bring it back up, like juices. Wheatgrass juice, 4 ounce shot of wheatgrass juice is terrific because it's flooding the body with what is called superoxide dismutase. Taking reduced glutathione, 2,000 milligrams, that will help. Also, if you have any high-level oxygenation, anything that's raw and living, like a fresh glass of juice. That fresh glass of juice, let's say celery, cucumber, and apple. Even better, celery, cucumber, apple, and fresh grape. Or if you just had fresh grape juice, all that allows a greater oxygenation of your blood. That increases the speed of recovery. It also speeds up recovery of illness and fatigue. If you take NADH, 100 milligrams, and coenzyme Q10 in its most bioavailable form at 500 milligrams, you're going to increase the recovery of the mitochondria and the immune system. So all these things are good. They all help you. But the average person doesn't want to be taking and will not be taking too many complicated things. They think it's just too much. You know, I'm taking 5 vitamins. Now you just tell them, go to a health food store and get colostrum and take a teaspoon after workout. I like spicy food, healthy spices. I grow a lot of different peppers, spicy peppers. I must grow about 20 different varieties. And they have different heat indexes. Some are very hot, some are mild. But they are all healing, especially if you are interested in having a healthy digestive system, because they can turn off inflammation in the gut. They can kill parasites and bacteria. Here's the latest on spicy peppers. Spicy peppers may cause your body to burn more calories. This is from UCLA's Center for Human Nutrition. Researchers say that the capsaicin, the compound found in peppers that give them that spicy taste, actually helps burn calories very well. So if you want to burn calories, extra calories, when you have your brown rice or you make yourself a nice veggie drink, just sprinkle in some cayenne. Sometimes when people see how much cayenne I put on my food, they go, whoa, Gary, that's an awful lot of pepper. Yeah, and you don't want to go that high initially. You're going to be on fire. But it's really good for you. And it's a very important part of all the different protocols that I use. So help you lose some weight, cayenne pepper. From the environmental section of our program, vanishing topsoil will lead to food crisis. From David Guttritt's Natural News, it says this. All the world's topsoil is set to vanish this century, if current patterns do not change. That's according to University of Sydney researchers presented at a carbon farming conference. Quote, it could be as little as 50 years, and that is a scary figure because it is not obvious that we have time to reverse decline and still meet future demands for food. It is not an exaggeration to say that soil is the most precious resource we have got, and we are not up to the task of securing it for our children, never mind our grandchildren, unquote. Now, the soil-depleting effects of chronic mismanagement, including overuse of plowing, over-amplification of synthetic fertilizers, poor erosion control, unsustainable farming, especially in the former tropical rainforest, are being exacerbated by global warming and human development. Coupled with a growing population that's getting older, and this poses a recipe for food disaster. The study found that in Australia, soil is being lost 500% faster than it's being regenerated through natural processes. In the United States, it is being lost 1,000 times faster. In Europe, it's being lost 1,700% faster. And in China, ready for this, China? We have people listening in China. 5,700% faster loss of topsoil than what is being replenished. And by the way, it was just this past year that Sydney, Australia experienced its worst dust storm in 70 years, and it's now in the middle of the worst drought in the country's history. Australia is certainly not a country that anybody should be moving to. And finally, on the health and nutrition, exercise reduces gallstones, from the European Journal of Gastroenterology and Hepatology. People who get more exercise are significantly less likely to develop painful and potentially dangerous gallstones. Quote, if everyone was to achieve the impossible and do the same amount of exercise as those in the most active category, gallstones could be reduced by 70%. That's good news. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Knoll. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm back in New York, and it's always nice to be back in this wonderful city. I'm in our studio in New York City, and we're broadcasting. Over the next 4 weeks, we will be building a brand new studio here at this location using our great room. We have a 35-foot high ceiling, and we're going to make a gigantic studio there with monitors and from around the world, and we'll have a big table and four television cameras. It'll be a lot of fun. And now that's coming. But now you can watch us here by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. From our What Can We Do in a Good Way If We Have to Get an X-Ray, and there are times when you're just going to have to get an X-Ray. By the way, about 70 million Americans will get X-rays this year. That's an awful lot of X-rays. How many of those X-rays are defensive? Meaning you're getting it not because you need it. Instead of getting one X-ray, maybe they give you 20. Defensive medicine. Is it a reality? You bet it's a reality. Because then you're less likely to be able to succeed if you sue your doctor if they say, we did every test. But how many do you need? A lot less. And X-rays are top of that list. So, and a CAT scan is the worst thing you can get. I mean, it really floods the body with X-rays. In fact, one full-body CAT scan can be equivalent to 500 X-rays. So let's say that we have to get one. What do we do? Ideally, the best thing you could do, an intravenous vitamin C drip, where you go in and get glutathione, probably about 5 cc's, about 50 to 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C, twice in 1 week after the X-ray. And that will help trap a lot of the hydroxyl free radicals and lessen the negative impact of all that X-ray in your body. Then let's say you can't afford that. That would run you about $150. So what do you do that's second best? Well, then take as much oral vitamin C as you can. Take a buffered form. That will help. Also, there the antioxidants are what you want. So you want to flood your body with antioxidants. Quite simply, it is the antioxidant that traps the free radical that prevents the damage to your DNA. So the more antioxidants you take throughout the day, I suggest 8 times a day. So that means for 24 hours, there's enough antioxidants in your bloodstream that they're trapping a substantial, but not all, the free radicals are in there. I would also use the polyphenols. Now, polyphenols, a lot of you are already using them. They're very versatile molecules found in plants, and research has shown that they provide a multitude of key protective benefits, including modifying gene expression that protects tissues from ionizing radiation, and collectively polyphenols offer important protection for some of radiation's impact upon the body. Which would be my all-star polyphenols? Quercetin. Quercetin I would use at 1,000 milligrams 5 times a day. I would take it at the same time and take vitamin C. Green tea, I would take 1,000 milligrams green tea 3 times a day or 3,000 milligrams. and resveratrol. I would take 200 milligrams 3 to 4 times a day. Resveratrol is both radioprotective in healthy tissue and also has anti-tumor activity. And resveratrol protects chromosomes from radiation-induced damage. And quercetin and its related compound protect the fats and proteins from otherwise lethal doses of gamma radiation, again, largely through their antioxidant property. And quercetin and other polyphenols not only provide chromosomal radioprotection, but they also shield the mitochondria DNA from radiation-induced oxidant damage. And then you could also use some curcumin, 800 milligrams. Again, this is after you've gotten your x-rays. Curcumin from turmeric, 800 milligrams a day, powerful radioprotective effects as a result of its antioxidant modifying and gene expression modifying characteristics. And it reduces DNA damage and tumor formation. And garlic and ginger, 5,000 milligrams of garlic and 100 milligrams of ginger. Garlic's high sulfur content supports natural antioxidant systems like glutathione. And then I would take oral glutathione in its reduced form. And garlic extract protects red blood cells from radiation damage. And garlic extract prevents radiation damage to the chromosomes in the vulnerable bone marrow cells. So those are your superstars. And just remember, as many as 29,000 cancers are caused each year as a result of CAT scans and other radiology scans. And radiation kills by producing oxygen-free radicals that damage the DNA and other structures. So the less radiation you get, the better it is for you. But that's what will help you. And then you could also take, on a lesser scale, NAC and acetylcysteine, 500 milligrams 5 times a day. It's a sulfur-containing compound, powerfully supports natural intracellular antioxidant systems, and also SAMe, acetylsalicylated methionine, at 500 milligrams twice a day. Okay, there you have it. And that's some good information on health and nutrition. I'm going to be taking calls in about 5 minutes. No guest today, so we have more time for your calls. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Joining me in studio in New York City right now is Kara Lee and Bill Thompson. Hi, Bill. Let's start with you.
Good morning. Good afternoon. How's everything?
Everything's great.
Okay, got a question for you. You know this... I've seen more and more, it was in today's New York Times, where the Democrats and the liberals are just bashing the Tea Party movement. What's the downside that they're facing when they try that kind of tactic?
First, you have to ask, why are they bashing them? What is their motive?
Well, right? They're terrified, I think, of the Tea Party.
Well, in part, the Democrats historically, at least, they have been projected as being for the common person, the working person, the union person, the poor. They're the ones who were sponsoring Lyndon Johnson's Great Society and carryover from Kennedy's efforts. After all, he was the one responsible for Medicare, helping those who needed help at different times in their life. They have failed miserably as a group. There are certainly individuals that have stuck to those. Conyers has done so from Vermont. Bernie Sanders has done
right.
That. Dennis Kucinich from Ohio
exactly.
Has done it. You have a handful that still represents some sense of idealism and integrity towards the common person. But then along comes people who say, okay, now we're in power. What do we do with the power? Well, the whole reason that the Democrats swept everything in the last election, not this election, but the previous election, in the House and the Senate, was because we wanted to end the war. We wanted to get out of Iraq. We saw it as another Vietnam.
Totally true.
And we'd already achieved what we needed to achieve in Afghanistan, getting rid of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. But it's impossible to get rid of the Taliban because the Taliban are Afghanistan.
Just the people.
I mean, and when you understand, if you really took the time to do a little scholarly research, you'd see that the Taliban are not against Americans per se, and haven't been. They're against the fact that the British arbitrarily cut half their country apart when it made the division. Here's Afghanistan, you know, and here is Pakistan, and half of the tribal territory ended up in Pakistan, the other half ended up in Afghanistan.
Right.
But it was a porous border. And you also have to understand that their culture is that every village has a hierarchical order. And it's always the oldest man, and then the brothers of that older man, and then the uncles. So it's a family affair, and everybody's interconnected, and they make their rules. Now, they then decide what relationship they want with other tribes. Well, in just one area, you have over 900 villages,
oh my,
meaning 900 tribal leaders, meaning at least 100,000 people who are all interrelated.
Right.
And every single one has Taliban. Every single village.
In their own style.
That's correct.
Yes.
Now, there was a time when those Taliban were on our side. Back when we wanted Russia out of Afghanistan,
right.
We paid money to and armed the Mujahideen. And one of those Mujahideen leaders was Osama bin Laden.
Right.
Then there was the Taliban wanted Islamic law, Sharia law. And their schools were madrasas, which are very radicalized religious concepts schools. And they then understand every religion can be viewed from extremes. Christianity is no different.
No different.
So when you realize that human beings wrote these religious books, no matter what anyone would like to think, and historically we can prove that, and they cannot show that God wrote any of these books, but let them deal with their fantasies. Then do you want the God of love and forgiveness? Do you want the God of peace and tranquility and harmony? Or do you want the God of anger, of wrath, of rape, of cannibalism? Of child molestation, because they're both in the same religious book, you know, the Old Testament. Which one do you want? And then do you want to be a moderate? Do you want to be a conservative? Do you want to be liberal? Do you want to be completely away from it? In the madrasas, there's only one way of teaching, the most radicalized way. So then you have to have an enemy. If you have good, you cannot have good without evil.
Right. Yin and yang.
You cannot have evil without good. So what you have is you have here is truth and everything else is deviation. And therefore, the more deviant you become, the more you must show that you are a true believer. And how do you show you're a true believer? Not questioning that truth and God is on your side and repressing and killing that which would oppose you. So then who are the bad people? Well, anyone that they're opposed to. And you have very strict rules. And it's very misogynist. Almost all religions are very misogynist. You know, I don't care which religion it is. They'll try to act like it's not, or the person's condition, you know, like under the Stockholm syndrome, where you know you're so obedient that you know right. If someone says I'm here to liberate you, they'll take out a knife and stab you right in the face.
Right,
I want my full body clothed. Right. You know, I want to be beaten on the ankles by you know police if they catch me. If there's a man that's seen talking to me, I want to be able to be stoned to death, you know, in a public square, buried up to my waist, and hit by everyone in the village. And that person would rather die than to accept that anything they had been accepting and believing in is untrue. So it's not like you're going to go in there and liberate people. You are not.
No, you're just going to get absorbed by them.
So you have to understand that you're dealing with a very pernicious undercurrent, and that is the actual educational process to the children. Let me just give you an example. You go to Pakistan today. Who are the most powerful people in Pakistan?
I don't know.
Okay, you have 21 families.
Right.
These families are like the robber barons were, the Astors, the Gills, the Mellons, the Swearingen, right. The Hills, right. The Rockefellers, the Carnegies, in the 1800s in the United States.
Right.
They control everything in that country.
Right.
They've divided all the land and the industries, and when you're in that their territory, every single business, I don't care if you're a little... if you're selling flowers in a market to a major corporation making cars, without exception, every single business must pay a special adherence tax to the people who control it, and it's a whole system. It's like organized crime family. Nobody can do anything in their area except them. You'll have public schools that are so poor that there's no building. They're sitting out on the dirt, no matter what the weather. And teachers that are sometimes not paid for 6 months. Right across the street is a big, beautiful, domed mosque. Teachers, food, warmth, books, everything you need. That's a madras.
I see.
That's the other's a secular school. So you have secularism, and you have radicalized Islamic views. And the Islamic view, for those who would like us not to believe it, is a very patient view. It can take 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years before they finally have enough people to impact a society. But in time, it is based upon strict interpretation of religious principles that dictate everything in their life. Everything. Which wins out?
Well, obviously the madras, because they're the ones that have the people that are feeding the food pays.
And they also feed the brain.
Right.
And those are the endless stream, the in perpetuity. If you kill 1,000 Islamic believers today in the desert, they'll have 1,000 tomorrow to replace them. You kill this leader, they'll replace another leader.
Right.
So this idea that somehow we are back to the old mindset of Westmoreland, bring me back the years of the Viet Cong, and you're a good soldier and we're winning the war, you could bring 1 million ears, and they've got 5 million more ears to bring.
Right. Exactly.
You're not going to win, and we didn't. There's a very great book, and anyone who's ever wanted to win in war has read it. It was called The Art of War.
Right.
Do you know who the author of that was?
I'm sorry, I just blocked
Sue,
it.
Sue? What?
Yeah, Lao Tzu is coming to my mind.
Lao
but
Tzu. You're correct.
Lao Tzu. Okay,
yes.
Fine.
And you first have to understand your enemy. We're building nuclear submarines. We're building gigantic aircraft carrier. They're building little landmines. Who's going to kill more people? Who's going to be more successful? Who's going to cost the country to go bankrupt trying to fight them?
But you're arguing a logical position from an emotional point. These people don't see logic on either side, even on our side. We can go to our military logically and tell them this ain't working. I'm sorry.
Okay, but understand something. The Democrats refuse to take the time to do the scholarship to see that the war in Afghanistan, the war in Pakistan, and the war in Iraq cannot be won.
Cannot be won, right.
So in time, we did what? We, meaning our Democratic Party in control, decided to give more money to Pakistan. Did Pakistan then give it to build better schools?
No.
To feed the people?
No.
To bring in corruption from the 21 families that control the government? No. It was absorbed in the black hole of corruption. Right now, we say that we're bringing sanctions against Iran. 1,000 tractor trailer loads, tankers of oil per day are going through a pass from Iraq into Iran. Now, how in the world do you take 1,000 trucks per day loaded with oil into Iran, against sanctions, knowing they're going to be paid by cash unless you had the top of the government involved?
You can't.
You can't. It wouldn't happen.
No.
So that means that there is systemic corruption that we have seen that's been documented at every level. We give $2.5 billion a year in Afghanistan to warlords who are all terrorists, who are all mass murderers, who've engaged in genocide, should be on a terrorist watch list.
Yes, I mean, they're just the dope alone they supply.
And we give them money, and they in turn pay the Taliban not to bomb the supply trucks of American bases that take the food and weapons to different bases. So we're actually paying the Taliban. This is the reality. We're paying the Taliban. Now, I can understand that, and you can understand it, but everyone in the State Department, everyone in the Pentagon, everyone in the intelligence agencies knows exactly what's wrong with that. Because they went to Yale, Harvard, and other Ivy League schools, they lack the common sense and reason. Because they've never had to have a real job in the real world, they've never had to do anything where if they failed, they were held accountable.
Right.
That's a wonderful thing about our president and everybody else.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of people disconnected. Then along comes Lou Dobbs and makes some statements that are for populists. boy, he gets popular, but then he makes a statement about how to deal with immigration, and he becomes, now we got a tool to use against him, right?
Right.
All you do is make one mistake, and then they nailed you. So now the Democrats, instead of saying, we got in power because you wanted us to get out of Iraq and Afghanistan, well, hello, we're going to increase our presence in both countries and in Pakistan, and we're also going to, in all probability, support Iran or support Israel in the war against Iran. And people said, but that's not why we put you in power. And they said, well, fool. When did any politician ever be honest
they
about what they
said
promised?
This. I mean, Barack actually said this. That was just a campaign promise. That didn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. So now what you have is you have the Democrats who didn't understand that you cannot win and why, who lack all scholarship, even though their intellectual conceit is palpable about how smart they think they are.
And how dumb they think we are.
Yeah. And then along comes some people who simply say, I'd like accountability. If you have all this money that you're getting from us, why are you giving it to these major corporations on Wall Street and bailing them out? Wouldn't it make sense if you wanted to help America and Americans that you first did simple things like, President Obama, why don't you sign an executive order to stop home foreclosures? Then allow a person a moratorium so that they can get back on their feet, so they can continue to live in that house, which continues to keep the value of the property up in the neighborhood, keep crime down. Why can't you stop repossessions of people's cars? Because if you don't have a car, how are you going to go to work? How are you going to look for work? Why don't you also give no interest loans to people that would open a small business or maintain a small business up to $5 million, but each $1 million in that loan, interest-free for 3 years, and then only 2%, they have to hire two employees for every $1 million they get at $20 an hour plus benefits, which comes about $30 an hour. So you now have two gainfully employed people per $1 million of loan, and you've got about 3 to 5 million people who would take those loans immediately, which would help rejuvenate every town and city in the United States, bringing local people into work and circulating dollars there. Now, based upon just $100 billion, you would be able to hire 15 million Americans, virtually eliminating our unemployment.
And ensuring his reelection.
But also helping the average American.
Yeah.
You would keep people from having their homes foreclosed on, their cars repossessed, and you give them a break. Or you put $13.3 trillion into the hands of the corporate thieves on Wall Street,
right,
which doesn't trickle down at all to us, and then you bail out the banks with $700 billion in the TARP plan, and they don't reloan it to any small business person. So you've given all this money and guarantees to people who are thieves, but they've got you into office, the Republicans and Democrats in the White House. So now a group of people looks at this, and they say, hold on a second. We want you to be accountable. Why is Greece in debt? Why are they virtually insolvent? Because instead of putting the money into where it should be and reforming their tax system and making sure that rich pay their taxes and everybody pay their taxes, instead they decided to build $2 billion for two submarines. And they want new jets. Who's Greece going to fight? Troy?
Right.
Is there some Mesopotamian king I'm not aware of floating around there with 16 guys and shields?
Well, there's Macedonia. That could be a problem.
Oh, then they've got Brad Pitt
right.
dressed up like... I mean, this is insanity.
Right.
What happens when a bureaucrat who's never had to work in their life actually spends money? That debt is what got them into trouble. Not just lying about their indebtedness, but what they were spending money on. What if in the United States we simply said one flat tax and everybody has to pay it? There are no tax exemptions, no offshoring. Every corporation must pay a tax and every individual must pay a tax. Do you realize that we would balance the budget in 24 months?
Oh, sure.
But we don't. So we allow all the corporations to have tax loops. In fact, you know, British Petroleum got almost $7 billion in givebacks by the United States. We gave $24 billion this year by Barack Obama to the oil cartels, and yet they were the most profitable industry in the world.
And our international sales by these corporations are funneled through the Turks and Caicos Islands, so that none of that money that they make overseas is taxable unless they bring it back here.
And you know how much corporate America put into offshore accounts so they didn't have to pay taxes on it?
No.
$6 trillion. $6 trillion. So you see, as long as the lobbyists have the power,
right,
and the special interest groups, nothing changes. So along come some people say, if you know more of this, you have to be accountable. We see the giant bureaucracies at the state level, the local level, and the federal level. We want effective, accountable government. Is that unreasonable, Kara?
No, I would definitely be behind that.
Okay.
And that's what we were promised anyway.
Yeah.
And that's where it started. Now, along the way, when it became a movement that people began to see could actually help make votes, then the Republicans, opportunistic parasites that they are, never saying a word that they didn't get an erection, wanted to go fight someone with it, they run out because war. It's just the ultimate aphrodisiac to them. And then in come the ultra-conservatives, you know, the Rush Limbaugh conservatives, you know, don't think, just scream and rant and make accusations without any reason. It's not him I've got a problem with. It's his audience. If you're willing to listen to those tirades and that kind of irrational ranting, it's like Glenn Beck, then the problem's not Glenn Beck. He's just a modern-day lonesome road from facing the crowd, Patricia
Neal,
the man who had everybody loving him until Patricia Neal left the mic on at the end of a television program and saying, goodbye, you idiots, you stupid people. And then they say, what?
Yeah.
You know, but it's the quality of the person needing to have that type of highly polarizing energy in their lives. If you looked at these people who are the most radical, toxic people out there, they're easy to see the problem. They're megalomaniacs, grossly insecure, and will say anything to get attention. If they were younger and female, they'd be Gaga.
Yeah. Hey, Gaga? Yeah. Oh, okay.
That flame will burn out quickly.
Yeah.
But they're sustained by this dysfunctional group of people. Well, today, when people try to speak out, immediately they have to be stopped, because if they're speaking out and they're not identified as Democrats or Republicans, then that means they're drawing people away from the Democrat and Republican base. And that scares the Democrats and Republicans. So they say, racist. Yeah, you've got some racists. You've got stupid people out there. But how many of them are there? I was in one Tea Party rally with my mic going up and down. I didn't see a single incendiary sign. Why didn't they talk about what was discussed that day? Tax reform.
Right.
That was number one issue.
Right.
Reasonable people talking about it. Now, I'm not even talking about the middle class now. I'm not talking about the poor class. I'm talking about more educated people who are looking at the problem saying we can't keep going on with this. That threatens them. Because what is the largest growing sector right now? It's the Tea Party.
Right.
But you're going to have not one Tea Party. You're going to have three Tea Parties. You're going to have the radicalized right headed by Sarah Palin. In the next presidential election, mark my words, there will only be two candidates at the end, Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton. And you're going to have Palin heading one group of, you know, the Ron Paul's son, Tea Party, but then you've got another group, the Libertarian Constitutionalists. But then you've got another group. You'll have progressive Tea Party members. They'll fracture out in the next 12 months, I see.
They're already actually forming a new party, a progressive liberal party called One Nation.
Yeah.
And a lot of progressive organizations are coming together to, not to combat the Tea Party, but just as kind of the other side of political affairs.
They will be, because it's been radicalized and damaged. So you have to have something emerge from that, where the people who don't want to be identified, but if you want to protest taxes, you want to protest military intervention, where would you go? Where are the other rallies? Unless I'm missing something, I'm not seeing rallies every month or every week around the country protesting inequities and poverty, hunger, invasion of our rights. I'm not seeing those. So you go to where at least you can join other voices. Now, then you have to distinguish, are these other voices in unison with me or opposed to me? Now you'll start to see more specific groups, like you'll have a peace party out there. The Peace Party will probably coalesce with the Green Party, you'll have Constitutional Party, probably coalescing with some of the Libertarian Party. So you're going to have all this stuff break out and be better defined. That's the problem with the Democrats, because the ones who got power betrayed the people that they promised. They became
They just treated us like we were idiots, like we were stupid.
That's a mistake. They'll be voted out of office, and unfortunately, and the regrettable part is, the Republicans who caused this mess will get the majority, and then you'll have a completely polarized Congress.
Right. Nothing's going to get done.
Next.
Question. This kind of upset me. I read the article in Vanity Fair about Peter Max. What in the world? Why Vanity Fair, why did they kick him around so much? What the heck did he ever do?
Think of some of the great classical painters. Leonardo da Vinci in the 1400s.
Raphael.
Yeah, Michelangelo, Rembrandt, Peter Paul Rubens in the 1500s. These are great artists, classical artists. Raphael in the 15, he lived a short life, what, 1482 to 1520? And yet look at his great work. You walk in, you see a Raphael, you know it's Raphael. You see a Albrecht Dürer from the 1400s. You see a Titian from his 1920s work. His 1520s. And then Caravaggio in the 1500s. Those are classical artists. Then you had various new schools with the Impressionists. Think of the great Impressionists. Henri Matisse in the he lived a long life, 1869 to 1954. He was one of the longest-lived painters in history. And you had George O'Keeffe, an American, who was very famous, lived out in the West. And you also had Jason Pollock and Andy Warhol. And Vincent van Gogh and Claude Monet and Salvador Dali. Who else did we have?
Gauguin.
Yes, and Paul Chazon, mm-hmm. and Renoir, René Magritte.
And Rembrandt.
No, Rembrandt wasn't that. He was in the classicals.
I see.
And you had Goya, de Gaulle, Klee, Chagall. What you had is you had individuals who were, in effect, pop artists their time. Today, look at who we have. Now, if they were going to criticize Peter Max, they should criticize Elton John and Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney is worth about $1 billion plus. He's a pop artist. He's right. Not a classicalist.
Right.
All right, you're not going to go to Carnegie Hall and see him work.
No.
But he entertains, and he's appreciated, and people like him. And he's had a long and enduring career. Hasn't done anything in a long time, but after Beatles and Wings, he was pretty much over, except for some solo work. But he was very successful. In fact, only one person was actually more financially successful, but he then lost that Midas touch, and that was Michael Jackson, because right. Jackson got his catalog, and that catalog's worth $500 million.
Yes. Right. Yeah, isn't thanks to Yoko Ono.
Isn't it amazing that Michael Jackson owned the Beatles catalog? And
he also owns Happy Birthday, the most popular song in America.
Oh. So when you look at Elton John, you see a man who is living an extraordinarily extravagant life. Big mansion. I think his flower bill alone, so he could have fresh flowers in his house, whether he was there or not, was $50,000 a month. He went virtually broke. They had to come in several years ago and give him an enormous loan and use his catalog of all present and future and past works of art as collateral. And then he had a break. He got into Las Vegas. And that got him out of his debt. But he's a pop artist. You can appreciate his music or not, or his flamboyant dress and, right. and stage presence. But Liberace was no different,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So here's what you have to understand about Peter Max. Peter Max, you will not see in anyone's top 100 artists. But in what he has done, no one else has done. If you took all the artists I mentioned, all the great classical painters and Pollock, put them together, Peter Max has made more money. I'm going to guesstimate that Max is probably worth maybe $500 million. He lives a very simple life. He doesn't do a whole lot except his work. Now, why is he not as well known as let's say, Andy Warhol? I knew Andy Warhol, and Peter Max is a friend of mine. And Warhol created a whole persona around him. He wasn't a great artist. He wasn't even a great pop artist, but he was very creative. But he hired a lot of people around him. Is there anything that unique about doing silk screens of Marilyn Monroe and adding a few flashes in it and someone buys $50,000?
Tomato soup.
Tomato soup can. But his movies, if you go back and look at all those movies he made, they were terrible. They were direct. One of them was a friend wanted to invite me once to one of his movies called something about sleep. But it was 8 hours of someone sleeping. Only he could get away with that. And people thought it was real hip to sit in a movie theater and watch. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
No.
Yes. And he was very clever because people couldn't always afford his work. So he had barter. You got a Rolex watch? Well, give me the watch and I'll give you something.
Right.
And he had all these people mass producing all of his stuff. But he became appreciated in his time. Peter Max, as an individual, I felt was far and away more creative. But Max has a certain flair. When you look at a Peter Max painting, you know it's a Peter Max painting. Peter made the mistake of allowing the reporter for Vanity Fair too close to him. And when he was that close, he got to see his human side. He made a whole thing about wanting to control any photographs that were taken at a party. Why? Because he didn't like the fact it would show his thinning hair. So big deal.
Right.
You know, Barbara Streisand doesn't allow any of her photos out unless she personally selects them. Ask anybody who's got control over their life. Ask any celebrity about their contracts.
Sure.
And all the extras that come with it. Oh, I'll only do this film if I get my own private gym and private chef, masseuse, and chiropractor. All these things come with it. So if you're going to attack Peter Max for saying he likes money, yeah, he likes money. And he doesn't apologize, nor does he tell you otherwise. He loves money. Should he love money more than life? No. It was interesting because just 3 months before this article came out, Peter and I had dinner together. And out on the street, on Amsterdam and 90th Street, I stopped and I looked at him. I said, Peter, you're over 70 years of age. You have an enormous inventory of work. Every cruise ship carries your work. You've got plenty of money. You're well respected. I've never seen anybody say, oh, I don't like my Peter Max painting. I'm taking it back. No one's ever done that.
No one's done this, no.
Why don't you give yourself a break and start to enjoy your life? Peter works 7 days a week, every day of the year. I've never seen Peter Max take a day off. He loves his work. He loves creating. He's a dynamic energy with creative talent. And that's what they try to make it look like. Somehow he was just in things for the money. Peter does a lot of good humanitarian work. He does a lot of things to help people. He's very caring. He's very nurturing. He's very loving. He's a very loyal friend. He goes out of his way for his friends. And he's an outstanding businessman. If you wanted to do an article on Peter Max, why don't you do an article about how he's the most financially successful artist in world history? That is a legitimate article. And then let him tell you how he does it.
Right.
If you want to say you like or don't like his work, fine. That's subjective.
Sure.
All right? But criticize every other successful artist, pop artist, entertainer, if you're going to criticize Peter Max. I thought it was a cheap article.
It really was, because they didn't even bring in the fact that how much of this was going to charity.
Yeah.
He was getting so.
Anyhow, but Peter's Peter. Kara.
All right, Gary. Well, I also had a couple questions off of some New York Times articles. This first one is about Obama is about to outline his new strategy plan to help cut HIV infections. They said that their goal is to cut down HIV infections by 25% within the next 5 years, and this will be the first ever national AIDS strategy in the works since the start of the administration. And my question for you, Gary, was, you know, what do you think would be a proper plan to prevent HIV, and what do you think Obama's actually going to try to do to cut HIV infections?
Well, if he's like every other president from Clinton and Bush, He'll do nothing. He'll give money to different groups claiming that they can do something about AIDS, and it will stop nothing. Because AIDS is not due to a virus. AIDS is due to poverty. For example, how many people do you know have AIDS?
I know a couple people that have AIDS.
Okay. Are they gay?
Yes.
Fast track gay?
I don't know what that means.
They ever use drugs?
No.
Okay. Have you checked to see how many other illnesses will cross-react with HIV?
I haven't personally, no.
Why don't you ask these people to have their blood checked for such things as hepatitis? Or are they both male or female?
They're male.
All right. If you have liver problems, you can have a cross-reaction. So you have at least 83 separate conditions that if you have those, you can get a positive reaction. So then what are you treating? If I looked in a person's blood and I saw that they had hepatitis, I would help treat the hepatitis. Now, I've worked with probably as many people who have AIDS as anyone I know in the United States. And when I put them on a healing protocol, they get well. And then they're no longer diagnosed with AIDS. So if you make the whole war on AIDS, this HIV, then why is it that after spending almost $400 billion, having over 2 million people work in the world on AIDS, we have not done anything to lessen AIDS, and it's still in the same risk group, fast-track gays, hemophiliacs, and intravenous drug users? If it was an infectious disease, easily transmitted, then all the other people, the wives and husbands of people who have hemophilia, should be positive. They're not. Magic Johnson's wife, who had unprotected sex with, should be positive. She's not. The children he kissed should be positive. They're not. And Arthur Ashe's wife should be positive. She's not. So you cannot show that it's sexually transmitted. You cannot show that it's an infectious illness. Therefore, if you have not the basis of what we were told was AIDS, infection and transmission, then you've been told lies. And there are over 2,700 leading scientists, including Nobel Prize winners, who agree with that. So virtually everything about AIDS is wrong. So if you want to help prevent AIDS, then show people what causes immune dysfunction, including poverty, malnutrition, and then clean up the blood from what they already have in them. You bring your two friends to me, and 12 months from now, they won't be diagnosed with AIDS. Okay?
All right.
I'm Gary Knoll. We have... we want to say goodbye to our WMYE audience. I see we have people on the line. Let's go over and say hello now to... let me just see who we have here. Cliff from Brooklyn. Hi, Cliff. You're on the air. Cliff, you're there. Well, we don't have Cliff anymore? All right, then let's say hello to Alex from California. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Good. Where are you living in California?
The high desert.
Okay. How can we help you?
Yeah, I just had a question about colostrum. I thought it was interesting that you brought it up, actually, because I had been researching on that. I'm a vegan, and I have been reading up on how it's very beneficial, but the problem is it's a dairy product. That's the bottom line. And I was wondering if any allergic reactions can come from taking colostrum, since it is a dairy product.
It is from dairy, but generally it's how it's processed. It's filtered. And what you could do is simply have yourself tested. Simply do a simple kinesiology test with it before you take it.
Okay.
All right.
What is your views on taking it and being a... I know you are a vegan as well. What are your views on that?
Well, I wouldn't take colostrum myself. I know other things will build the immune system, which I gave. That's why I gave the extra information beyond the colostrum. Just use the other items that I said would help with post-exercise fatigue, including D-ribose and creatine monohydrate.
Yeah, I use all the other stuff.
All right.
Thanks, Gary.
All the best to you. And we have time for, let's see what we have here. Let's say hello to Amy from Queens. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you. I've been waiting for a while, so...
I'm... Amy just hung up. Well, Amy, you were holding for a while, and then you hung up on yourself. All right, that's okay. I'm looking at the clock, and we're running out of time. I will be back with a guest in 2 hours, and I want to thank everyone for taking their time and listening to this program. The whole idea is to get us to think in ways we haven't thought before with positive solutions. Today we learned about the environment and what we have to know about it. We also learned about what we could do to help the average person. We learned that the Democrats and Republicans are both part of the same corporate party, and therefore there will be a number of progressives, independents of various backgrounds that will be offering challenge, and we really do need a third party in the United States. My 3 o'clock guest is Robert Jensen. You won't want to miss that, and I welcome you to listen in at that time. Thank you very much for making Progressive Radio Network the fastest-growing internet radio program in the world, and this is the number one listen-to program by progressive-minded people. Have a nice day.
Is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.